Hello, everybody. You're listening to We're Goblins, a show about buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet through the decades with your friendly but hostile neighborhood goblins. It's Wednesday again, my dudes.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? This is CIDR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. I'm your host, Hannah. And I'm here with Tasha.
Hello again, here as a hostile goblin, maybe not so much a friendly goblin, but yeah. Every time we do the word dive, it becomes like a bit of a soapbox pedestal moment. But yeah.
What chicken?
Here we are. I was having like a romanticizing myself moment sitting out in the sun and like staring at a seagull and that he was sitting on like an unused heating lamp. And I was like, oh, the heating lamps are turned off. And that is just, that's the emotion right now. Is the heating lamps have turned off, everybody. So we're going to talk in like calm, hushed voices. Maybe we are friendly goblins today. Which is ironic, actually, because we went down the road of discussing what I'm going to call, what am I going to call it?
Yeah, I had trouble with that too. I'm someone who likes to have a framework to approach things. And here I was like trying to hold sand in my hands.
Yeah, staring at seagulls and trying to hold sand. Talking about camp language, the language of camp and perhaps maybe appropriation.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking just before this episode that it's a great segue from our last episode where we talked about woke and talked about AAVE, which is African American Vernacular English. And as Tasha said, we're talking about camp, drag culture lingo, queer lingo, and that intersection diagram.
Yeah, and so what we usually do before we start one of these is we pick words or sayings, and we had thought that throwing shade, and what was the other example?
Spilling the tea.
Yeah, we're good places to start with this. Because I think that they are good examples of AAVE as well as like they've had heavy circulation in drag communities over the years. And I know that we're encountering these phrases a lot now because of the popularity of RuPaul's Drag Race and how it's kind of more steeped in our vernacular. But these words have been around forever and they have been used by those communities forever. And they just represent this intersectionality that I think is kind of what we're getting at with this episode's theme.
Yeah, and perhaps, I don't know if this is a stretch to say, but I feel like that intersectionality is often missing from the larger dialogue around when we talk about language and words and just lingo of subcultures is like, actually, yeah, it can seem like a bit of a chicken and egg situation, but a lot of drag lingo did come out from AAVE, and the intersectionality is very pertinent because a lot of drag culture was born in Harlem, New York neighborhoods, predominantly Black. And drag culture often, again, started from like drag queens of color, primarily Black and Latinx drag queens. And so it just, it only makes sense. And I was Urban Dictionary, of course, my friend.
What are the four pillars of this show?
Please tell us again.
Urban Dictionary and Know Your Meme. Probably Wikipedia, and then the odd New York Times article about some dumb TikTok trend. But like, at least I go down that road again because I did already kind of have an angry digression about these articles.
Yes.
But that generally tends to be where our research lands. Mm-hmm.
And I will often read one Vox piece and feel really
smart.
Oh,
Vox is so, in there. Okay. Five pillars, yes. Perhaps.
Mm-hmm. So I was also, yeah, you mentioned RuPaul Drag Race. Definitely. Mm-hmm. The big one, which started in 2009. Also Queer Eye. Like, that's the most contemporary example that I can think of.
Yep.
So Queer Eye and thinking about Jonathan Van Ness. And then I thought about Yes. And Urban Dictionary describes it as an annoying expression used by white girls and gays.
Wow, Urban Dictionary. Well, okay, here's the thing about Urban Dictionary, though, is often very unkind.
Yeah, yeah.
So we use it as a way to, like, seek out what people have said, because a lot of this has to do with, like, informal language.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like going down the road of, like, oh, the etymology of this word is not where we mean to land.
No.
So we do end up in unkind places, but...
Yeah, I do want to highlight that... I was also reading somewhere else. I mean, it's always a pipeline, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't. Do I go to Urban Dictionary directly? No, I don't. It's linked somewhere to and somewhere and somewhere. So it's so interesting that often you'll find cis, straight folks using these terms. And it's not just the term. It's also the way of saying it. I guess.
Yeah, there's inflections.
Yeah, so that's why I'm just highlighting the, like, annoying expression used by... And also, the second definition is an expression used by girls expressing extreme liking. So I just thought that was...
Extreme liking.
Interesting, yeah. I want a term for extreme hating. Let's be real.
Yeah, we are on the search, on the hunt. For something that speaks to my heart.
Yes. Okay, so what are your thoughts?
Well, okay, wow, big question, first of all. How dare you? Second, how dare you? I want to lay a little bit of a groundwork, too, about this, because when we talk about language, we often kind of, like, go down these roads of talking about what is happening in popular culture and maybe talking about, like, why and where we're getting these things. And I think something to keep in mind for this episode is that, like, adopting the language of a particular community is as much about believing that it is a desirable thing to be part of that community as it is, like, exposure to it. So maybe inserting this with, like, some of this language is about, like, desire and choice to be close to these things rather than just, like, assimilating what's happening around us. I think maybe some of our language is just kind of, like, quietly absorbed, and that definitely happens. But so much about language choices is about wanting to be part of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we talk about appropriation of, like, drag culture, of AAVE, and the use of these terms in, like, modern day communication is, like, a desire for people to, like, to feel part of these communities, and also expressing that they admire these communities,
mm-hmm.
that we admire these communities. It's sort of, it comes from those places. And I think that's where our language choices stem from.
Definitely. Yeah. Language is... Yeah, it's not black and white at all. Language always exists in so many shades of gray,
mm-hmm.
right? It's definitely admiration. It is what these subcultures embody. So if you talk about a lot of drag lingo, there is, or camp aesthetic, there is the sort of resistance and freedom and coloring outside the box, if you will, right? Coloring outside the lines. And you... feel that by being close or by mimicking that style, you can also feel some of those things, if that makes sense. And so
Yeah. It's
not as simple as, oh, this is appropriation. And yeah, I think that's when it gets so complicated. And it also goes to just talk about language and evolution of language, right? Where language, most of our mainstream language is born out of, stems from different subcultures. And I'm talking about especially like in groups consisting of like marginalized members of society. And then when those groups somewhat gain somewhat of an acceptance, their vernacular often bleeds into broader culture and society.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about when you couldn't be, think about, I'm thinking about like 1920s, 1930s, where being gay publicly was perhaps punishable by death. And then we have RuPaul Drag Race and Queer Eye now, where you can be openly gay and there is a lot more acceptance. Not to say that those communities are still not facing hate and oppression, but there's still a lot of acceptance and openness. And then you have these shows on mainstream television where they're talking in a certain way. And then rise of social media and those going hand in hand of like certain vernacular being popularized
mm-hmm.
as a result. And it's like, who knows? It's also just kind of like it's good, because good in the sense the acceptance part is good, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, this is great, because the opposite was a lot of talking about subcultures is a lot of language was also born out of code, right? Like what mm-hmm. we talked about woke was subtext. You were not supposed to know what code meant, because it was to signal especially Black folks and to be vigilant of racial prejudice. And then getting wider acceptance of like having BLM being so mainstream and around the world, where you gain acceptance, and then stay woke becomes a hashtag.
Yeah. I mean, oh, there's so much to talk about there. Yeah, there's this weird thing going on where when something becomes part of the mainstream, it's really saying that like people are like valuing, like value is embedded in this language. So people are valuing these aspects of these communities, sometimes unknowingly, which is the bad. And I think that's when it becomes an issue of appropriation, where like it's not a recognizing of what the value is in those words.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone uses them while consciously recognizing that value, like adding like slay to the end of every sentence, I think you know what you're sort of like aligning yourself with. It's a way of connecting, not just communicating.
Mm.
And it's a way of saying that you value those communities. If that makes sense.
Yeah. You know what? What's interesting? I think appropriation often also happens. Like, it's interesting what you said about knowing and unknowing, because going back to yes. Okay, I'm obviously not saying it.
Yeah, you're saying yes.
Yeah, I'm saying yes, but I mean YAS is like people, it's
you gotta say it. I don't feel comfortable.
Okay,
saying yes, queen.
I don't either. And wow.
I just need to say that aloud.
I hate you. You're making fun of me. Why don't you say it? No, here's the thing. Tasha knows this. I am a very deadpan person, and so I just don't have that flair.
Yes. That's Oh my god. That's exactly it.
That's it. It's not because I am conscious. I don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of
I'm sad and repressed. I'm sorry. I'm just not kidding. Like,
wow.
I can't have fun.
Oh my god, talk about yourself.
Is this about me?
yeah, we both are emo kids.
Yeah, we're deadpan emo kids, and
yeah, we can't say this.
Yeah, we can't.
So talking about that, it's also interesting that a lot of language goes unquestioned and people don't stop to think, oh, but I'm saying it in a certain way. Isn't that strange? And so even knowingly, if that makes sense, subconsciously, we can appropriate a lot of things, because, again, the line is so blurry between appropriation and appreciation and borrowed language, mm-hmm. because, I mean, if we were to really look into English language, it's so much of it is borrowed again from marginalized communities, from subgroups that we, I don't know, we would have to like take out so many things. But I did lose my train of thought, didn't I? But I think what I'm trying to say, I'm actually trying to talk about, so as Tasha said, Slay, I was interested in looking at Spilling the Tea, mm-hmm. right? Which, I mean, I
so slay.
Love some tea. Very lit. So, Spilling the Tea goes back to 1950s, and it was used amongst African-American women.
Of course.
It really, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the podcast that you recommended me, Normal Gossip, which I love, which is all about spilling the tea.
Shout out.
And we love some tea. both literal and in the form of gossip. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it just makes sense, because something that Normal Gossip really highlights is that often women, people throw shade at, wow, am I speaking in code?
It just happens.
It just happens. But women get flack for gossiping.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, hey, historically, sexism, hello. And you often do it also to keep yourself safe.
Yeah. So it's a term that very clearly was used to prop up an idea that society was pushing down.
Yeah.
It
just makes sense.
It makes sense.
African-American women were using that word and then it got adopted by the drag community. So I have this quote here by Rusty Barad, who's a linguistics prof, and he talks about how African-American women in particular were symbolic of a strong femininity and became a way for gay men. And he's specifically talking about Harlem and drag queens, specifically black drag queens. And it was a way for them to claim femininity in a stance against straight ideas of masculinity. So kind of that through line, it just makes so much sense.
Right. And I think it's also important to note that that this is like another example of really poetic language that is not easily interpretable. Just as when we were talking about woke a couple weeks back, we noted that it was like it was just like a fluid and poetic way of talking about something that wasn't straight and to the point didactic. And I think things like spilling the tea, which is also quite a, like a metaphoric way of speaking.
Yeah.
Someone said, and I will always do this, I forget who said it, that poetry is a language of surplus. And I think that makes a lot of sense for this, because like it is a language of surplus that a lot of people can find ways to experience their sort of like emotionality with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be super rigid.
No. It's sort of like the depth and the fluff.
Yeah.
And there's texture. There is so much symbolism, right? Because for me, like the way I would interpret like South Asian culture, like the hill they're going to die on is chai, one of the hills. And then I think about who makes chai, it's the women. And then you would be making tea, and then I don't know, talking about whatever. And so there's just so much context even in that phrase. And like,
yeah,
you can like, is there anything that can replace spill the tea and have that same effect? It just can't, because a lot of AAVE slang is just
speaks
to phenomenal.
Like, yeah, and it speaks to like lived experience,
and it,
right?
Absolutely, and it's like visceral.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it like the way it hits, there's not much else that can really do justice. And so I can imagine why it becomes popular on social media, platform media, and then everybody starts saying it because it's, I don't know, fun.
Yeah.
Right?
There's also, I think that's an important point too. Like fun is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Fun and expressiveness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I definitely have, I mean, how many times do we hear people say, and I'm one of them, I hate the song, but it's really catchy. Oh, actually, it's really catchy now. I love it. And so
the journey
that happens with a lot of slang as well, where I would like slay. I definitely was like, oh, I might be too old to say that. And then I don't know. I'm sure I'm saying it. Catch me.
Catch me slaying. Yeah, I mean, there's a part of language that if you're going to have fun with it, it requires a kind of letting go and allowing yourself to have fun with it. And I think that's something that the collective we are reaching for when we're using language that is of a more like campy, poetic genre.
Yeah.
Is like we're trying to just let go of conventions and we are trying to just have more fun and trying to align ourselves with that kind of way of living and being. And they can have political underpinnings, as they often do in the case of spilling the tea. Clearly there is a rhetoric of like gossip being a negative thing. And of course, women and particularly Black women do it. So society deems it irreprehensible. But like those things are still like really fun and uplifting ways of explaining experiences. And I think that is what people are aligning themselves with as well when they're adopting these new terms, whether or not they're always totally conscious of what politically is happening in those words' histories or in their present too.
Yeah, that's such a good point about uplifting, because that is really
uplifting
key.
Is a good word.
It's such, it's so key, because it is a way to create community as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's also like signaling to someone off, like, you get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, even especially with the poeticisms, like, if you get it, you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even within the mainstream society and society at large, like, terms that go viral, it's like, but not everybody is using it in a certain way. And then folks that are, you're like, okay, this person gets it and I align with this person. And so it is solidarity in a lot of ways. And things do have, things have political undertones and histories of resistance. And often you can almost like pay respect to it by remembering that past, because even if it's like things are a lot better, but there's so much such a long way to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have any thoughts on, because I don't know. Wow. I just had a sometimes and it's like head empty, no thoughts.
Yep. So which is a whole episode in of itself one day.
Oh, boy. I think it's time for a break.
Maybe it is.
Is what I'm trying to say.
We got some campy, theatrical, extravagant, super sleigh jams that we're going to lead into.
Okay, I cannot top that, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Dear goddess, give me patience, tired of trying to explain. I've got zero tolerance when they fuck with my sacred space. Bar the trolls, hit the corners for escape. Build the platforms, take up space. Code the scripts to infiltrate. Cause you're never not fighting a racist system that keeps powers in place and that fails to acknowledge the root of your pain. Took it too personal, over emotional. Where are you from? Are you beauty or brains? Over the top, I'm too little or too much. Damned if I do and I'm damned if I do not. Talking class, race, and the sex intersections. My feelings are valid and I won't dismiss them. I was taught not to trust my own mind and decisions. My body is my body. I won't give them an apology. Indoctrinated habits like smile, nod your head. I'll talk less, close my legs. What? That's exactly what I just said. Are you serious? If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? Will I just be dismissed? Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Toxic masculinity is killing all the poetry. Hold my brothers back from free, flowing with the sea. Our tears like the holy ink to sink a patriarchy, popping egos like balloons, cause we don't exist for you. Burn your eyes with tiger bombs, don't try to tell her to be calm. Colonial repercussions, any questions? CC the boss, she's the boss. Expert of self, they pray to moon, she raps and spells. I'm attuned to what you're numb to. Check my mood ring, did I ask you? No, I prefer my make-believe to their bullshit. I work within it, but at the end of shift, I build spectrums on the internet. I art attack cause I'm an empath. Foundations, Filipinx, no limits on how I choose to express. With my pixels and my queerness, you can't hold me back. If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? Will I just be dismissed? Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Ooh. Ooh. If I want to cry, if I want to cry, if I want to, it's my art. I can rage if I want to rage, if I want to cry. Ah. Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough.
You want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Catalano is happening on July 8th with vendors, food, art, and live music to explore. Come on down to the Vine Stage to say hello to CITR's booth and get a chance to be on radio. Can't make it? No worries. CITR will be live broadcasting interviews and artist performances at the Vine Stage. Artists such as Hallelujah Hailu, Viberson, Salt Spring Underground, Hip Hop Mechanics, and more. Check out the booth live at Catalano or the live remote broadcast on CITR.ca. Live presents Between the Buried and Me, the Parallax 2 Future Sequence Tour. The band will perform the album in its entirety live at the Vogue Theater on July 10th with special guests Thank You Scientists and Rivers of Nile. Don't miss the legendary progressive metal band Between the Buried and Me live at the Vogue Theater on July 10th. Get tickets now at mrglive.com.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Welcome back, listeners.
Hello, hello.
You're listening to We're Goblins, only on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, and I don't know why I'm whispering.
Yeah, it's just a soft little voice to bring you back after we played, like, two very high-energy campy songs. Like, hi, welcome to our show.
This is me launching my radio voice.
We're talking about camp and theater.
And it is 1 a.m. It's 1 a.m.
I wish if this show played late at night, I think like we would have like
it would be moody and mysterious.
Yeah, moody conversations about words. No, we're always moody. We called this Word Goblins.
Yeah, come on. Who are we kidding?
This is Word Goblins. We're having moody conversations about words.
At 4 p.m.
Yeah, midday. We're grumpy, but also sometimes not.
Keeping it real.
Yeah.
Well, we were on break, folks. Tasha was making a list.
Oh, it's not finished.
Oops.
Yeah, because we were talking about language that we've determined is campy, language that is stemming from AAVE, language of like drag culture, stuff that is seeped into everyday colloquial kind of like real life and online life speak. And we were circulating around the term spill the tea, but also on Fleek and On Point and Slay and Eat and Yeet.
Bay.
Bay is a big one. There are simply too many, but they all kind of do a similar thing where the Venn diagram is just like so tightly packed in between different like identities. Different histories to come together to give us this like very poetic, very theatrical, very like extravagant language that we've all kind of like taken upon. Those for whom this language was not meant for are now using it. And I don't tend to fall on that is like a totally negative thing because a conversation that we were having was that language adoption is so much about like admiring communities and trying to be part of things as much as it is about just like absorbing. And so I think a lot of the times using things is a way of expressing value to those things.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, I can't be totally critical.
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean, going back to the words, your list. Those words, and if you were to do a Venn diagram, are quite similar, but they're also very unique.
Yeah.
There's nothing like spilling the tea.
There's nothing like yeet.
There's nothing like lit.
Yeah, lit belongs on here as well.
It also, there is a bus ad, which we are not going to go into.
No, not the bus ad. We shall not give it any more time.
It's your favorite ad.
No,
Dreamlandia.
I hate it so much. Yeah, okay, but when this crosses over, like when people are using it to express value and community and communication, et cetera, love it.
Corporations?
When this becomes a way to sell identity, don't love it.
No.
So much of that adoption is about like associating brands with things, and I find that really yucky, because, like, of course.
Yeah, like, okay, brands, you're not, you shall not sit on the table with us.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't even go here.
As Mean Girl said. Like, I don't want, I mean, I, you know what, TikTok girlies using on Fleek, sure, have fun with it. But I don't want L'Oreal jumping on a bandwagon and being like, buy this concealer to look on Fleek. Like, no.
Yeah, of course.
Weird. Yeah. Awkward.
I do not want to be a product.
Yeah, like,
when it's issued back at you, you're like, okay, I have been made into a commodity.
Yes.
And I'm mad. And, like, all of these campaigns are, like, crafted in, like, boardrooms with, like, different creative directors that are thinking of the best way to issue this copy. And, like, what is written without effort is read without pleasure at all. Ooh. And, like, those ads are just like, boo, I hate it.
It's very much like hashtag what is trending.
Yeah, exactly. So things often tip into that zone, because when brands become savvy, they, like, find ways to, like, target and market towards people. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem. But when something becomes popular and colloquial, it is a way of expressing identity and community value, of which I don't see as, yeah, terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just going back to talking about drag slang and lingo in the LGBT community, this episode won't be complete without mentioning Paris is Burning, the very iconic documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, problematic behind the scenes, but definitely was a cultural moment.
Yeah, and the thing that I think about often with Paris is Burning is that I don't know how else I would have been able to, like, see the clips that I saw in that documentary. Mm-hmm. Those, like, little pieces of culture and, like, recordings of things having been said and done that will solidify it to that community, I think is important to be out in public, because, like, I just don't know where else. Where in the archival hell would I find? Mm-hmm.
It is. It's so robust. It was filmed over a span of 7 years, if I'm
mistaken. Think you're right.
It was late 80s, early 90s when the documentary came out. And exactly, like, all of that footage, that kind of subculture, the ball, the underground queer ball scene would be lost. And it's fascinating. I feel like it was so ahead of its time, and it's something that you can still watch and feel so much admiration for.
Yeah, and there's a moment too where, like, I don't know if you felt this when you're watching it, where you hear words and utterances, like, throwing shade, and it kind of, like, pulls you out of time for a second, because, like, watching a documentary that was set in a distant time, in a very particular pocket of culture that you don't have access to, and you're hearing the same words that you are currently using, it's like, it's kind of an out-of-body moment. Where you're like, oh, holy shit.
Yeah, because I clearly remember watching that documentary. Actually, I watched it again recently, maybe a couple years back, and there were multiple drag queens, not one, who talked about losing friends to HIV, and that was the culture, that was the moment in time that documentary was shot, and it was awful. It was very tragic, and we're so far past that. And so to kind of look at that documentary as sort of this point in time, which is, again, still relevant, did bring drag culture to the mainstream. A lot of slang that we use was first used in that documentary, and then, you know, we can talk about, like, where that comes from, and we've talked about that a bit in the first segment. But what is interesting is, I want to just read this, and I actually forgot which article I got this from, but it just goes to show why we're so, why drag lingo is so appealing, why campy aesthetic is so appealing. So this talks about drag has a language of resilience and snark. Even as it embraces its feminine side, it can be emphatic or emotional or guarded. It gives you, it's giving you side eye or props or a scoff. And I think that's just such a good, delicious description mm-hmm. of talking about everything drag, right? And in the same vein, I also want to talk about something that I learned doing research on this show, is that drag is actually an acronym for something. It stands for Dressed as a Girl, and it comes from the world of theater, and it goes back to when Shakespearean plays were first performed, when men dressed as women to play female characters because women weren't allowed to act and participate in theater. And that's wild. And also goes to show that... But we have identities, gender identity and sexuality is far more complex now. And now we're using more gender neutral terms. Like instead of drag queens, it's like drag artists or performers, because you have like non-binary folks doing drag, or you have like drag kings, which have been something of like a recent evolution, at least from what I know, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. And I think something that I wanted to touch on with that, because we've been tossing around words to describe these words, which is funny and meta, but we've been saying that it has a lot to do with drag, and it has a lot to do with camp. And I think it might be helpful to talk about why drag and camp are so intrinsically connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what might be obvious to a lot of people listening to this right now, certainly... I forgot about it until Hannah brought it up, but one of my favorite pieces of all time is Susan Sontag's Notes on Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give this a little bit of intersection of like critical analysis, why these words would be associated with like campiness and why campiness would be associated with drag, there is a nice moment in... Notes on Camp, which was published in 1964, is a part where Sontag says that camp sees everything in quotation marks. It is not a lamp, but a lamp, and I'm doing air quotes, not a woman, but a woman. To perceive camp in objects and persons is to understand being as playing a role. It is the farthest extension in sensibility of the metaphor as life as theater. And I think that this is a good way to describe that duplicity mm-hmm. that camp and like drag offers, and the words that stem out of these kinds of sensibilities. It is like this understanding of being as playing a role, or as like a variety of constructions, as life as theater, as performances, which are not restrictive ways of being in the world. They're actually ways of expressing just different aspects and nuances of being a person. And I think any time mm-hmm. in which you can access that, like, that kind of like theatrical, punchy duplicity is a way of being more in tune with yourself and your identity, because you're not just playing a single role. And so I think that maybe it's too far, but these words by extension kind of express that feeling of duplicity,
mm-hmm.
which like we can like really simply pull it back to like duplicity of like gender expression, for example.
Yeah.
You know, these things, while feeling kind of rudimentary, I think are really important in how we understand ourselves. And I think the language of camp and what drag has given modern language is this ability to like be able to play and to express, and by virtue of those things, be able to engage in duplicity, which we are not often able to do in mm-hmm. We live in a society.
Unfortunately, we participate in a society.
Yeah, and like where it feels like everything that you read these days is like three ChatGPTs in a trench coat just like hiding and trying to fool you, you know, like everything. And people are so worried about ChatGPT. and how it's going to take over creative outlets. And I'm not, because the language of drag and the language of camp reminds me that there's so much expression and fun there that, like, these language models can't really possibly duplicate. Certainly they can use the words, but as we are explaining, like, there's the way in which you use the words and the way in which you infuse them with value that changes things. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel as scared about where, like, the world is heading. Just in the creative zone, there are other scary things about language models that, yeah, I don't need to talk about right now, because, mm-hmm, like, Tash, calm down. But I do think this sensibility that drag and AAVE and camp gives us, mm-hmm, is, like, a freedom. And I think that that's something that, like, we get and we should treasure. And I think there is another moment in Notes on Camp where this idea of duplicity is, like, directly referenced, where she says that when the word becomes a noun, duplicity is involved.
Mm.
And I think that that is just a really beautiful way of talking about, like, the anti-essentialist ideas behind these words. And maybe everyone should use them. Is that crazy? Should everyone use them? Should is that a bad statement?
I don't think that's crazy. Well, first of all, thank you for giving us some hope, re-ChatGPT.
Actually, that's not what I intended.
No, but for real though, like, can ChatGPT do a word goblin episode? I don't think so.
ChatGPT doesn't understand symbolic meaning and taste and sensibility.
They're not linguist experts.
Yeah.
Excuse?
The people that are coming up with these words are, like, people that are in the moment and having fun with things.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think a language bot can do that. I'm not saying that robots can't have fun, but...
You can produce language in factories.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You heard it here.
Yeah, no, totally. I actually, on the picket line for the writers' strike, there was actually this one poster which brought me so much joy. And it's like, whenever we talk about art and talk about creatives, it's like, oh yeah, we can replace them with ChatGPT, but it's never the tech bros, you know?
Yeah, the power dynamics of these things are continually effed up.
Yes.
Yeah, the people that are making money off of it or that are putting the products out into the world are never the ones that you want to be doing it.
No.
I digress, but like...
Yeah, no, that was... I appreciate you sharing Susan Sontag. Obviously, her work is so important. Talking about camp, I also can't help but mention Rocky Horror Picture Show when we talk about camp, right?
Yeah, of course.
Really big. And often what became, like, interchangeable with camp, right? And how it's interesting, like, it was a cult classic and was a bit major flop, and now it's just one of the few films that's screened every year around the world, right? Every Halloween, like, there is a Rocky Horror Picture Show screening, and it's, like, it's huge. It's, like, a whole, subculture. And something else that I was going to say, and now I have totally lost my train of thought. Oh, yes. So in 2019, the theme for Met Gala was camp.
Yeah.
And campy. And that, things like that makes me mad because it's, and that's it, right? When we say the line is blurry, it's very interesting. So I did not know this, but apparently tickets for Met Gala, I mean, also, first of all, like, would I ever be invited to Met Gala? No, never in a million years. But apparently, you can buy a ticket if you're rich. It's $30,000.
Holy shit. You can buy anything, though.
You can buy anything. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's always a price.
Do not. Okay. Also, do not quote me, but I did read it somewhere. But yeah, it's a lot, like, it's opulence, everything. Well, but it's so interesting. If you think about what Vogue and Anna Wintour and Met Gala stands for, the elitism versus camp in general. Like, yeah, sure, there are intersections with, like, but the opulence is different, because then there's the, like, we're not talking about the class struggle. We're not talking about, like, it's not for you. Mm-hmm. Like, if anything, camp exists in spite of you folks.
Yeah.
The 1%. And then you can just wear it as a prop.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also something that is in this piece is the idea that, like, that it exists as a, like, mode of theater, of a way of trying things on. Camp is, like, having a private, zany experience of a thing. I think any, like, super self-serious example of those things, like Ella, the Met Gala, or, like, Vogue in general, mm-hmm. is not embodying it as much as it would be, like, showing some of the artifice of it, but it's not like the private zany experience of no. something that which would be campy or extravagant
mm-hmm.
or fun.
Yeah, totally. No, it's definitely, it's empty.
Yeah.
It's performative. It's like you can't, because you don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, and going back to Susan Sontag's piece, a lot of, like, from what I deciphered from that essay is, it's a way of being.
Mm-hmm.
It's your lens from through which you see the world. And that's often lost when people think of subcultures as accessories, right? Like, how much Black culture, time immemorial, has been appropriated by pop culture. Kardashians, looking at the Kardashians. But you don't really get it. It's not something that you can, like, put on and then toss aside.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, right? And similarly, I think of drag, because people are often thinking of it as, like, fashion, but that's it.
Yeah.
And not the depths of it, because there's so much more than, like, what meets the eye.
Yeah, I mean, there's engaging with something for the underpinning of it, and just engaging with something for the artifice of it. And I think some of the hallmarks of camp is, like, the spirit of it, or, like, the spirit of extravagance. And that's only something that, like, that is a word that means it's experiential. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can't just put it on as a costume. You have to experience it.
Yeah.
And so those moments in culture where it feels like it's kind of more or less being sold to us, like the Panago ad that we don't want to talk about. it's not in the spirit of extravagance. It's just kind of something that's being packaged up and
to sell you something.
It's very clear. Yeah.
Yeah. And something else that has to be mentioned is that we're living in a time where there's so much anti-trans violence. Especially in the States, there is so much anti-trans hate and ideology, and also what happened at University of Waterloo with, like, stabbing in a gender studies class. And people are, I don't know, I feel like attack on, like, gender expression is at an all-time high. And then with, again, I think it becomes relevant to talk about the commodification of drag culture, off sort of queer aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
and something that you can't be selective with. You can't forget how this subculture is born out of resistance, to fight against oppression, and not like, oh, it's like all fun and games and that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which people often tend to forget. And I don't think we have reached a point in society where all communities and especially talking about queer community, is like fully liberated, and you can just be like, oh yeah, like everything's up for grabs.
Yeah, it's that same argument of like using the language, like using language that it was not meant for you, that was not expressive of your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that in the woke episode, which this has a lot of crossovers with.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these words and terms that we are openly using are concerned fundamentally with emotions as the currency of politics, which is like something that the far right will always trivialize.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I think focusing on the use of these words in that way, in the way of the poetic, in the way of the symbolic, of something embodied and emotional, is a way to oppose that far right understanding of a more didactic, emotions are not valid, kind of world.
Yeah, I hate to cut you off, but we actually are over time. Wow.
Over time, we did it. Yeah, that ends it.
That's it.
That's it. That's all.
Thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye. Small goodbye.